This episode of the Westside Discussion is sponsored by Mando Disco Air and Birdie Fuel Coffee. Use code WSD10 to save 10%. Welcome back to the Westside Discussion podcast, the first and only podcast dedicated to Westside discs. My name is Jay. Thanks for listening. A few weeks ago, I interviewed Gabriel Diaz-Serrano, the team manager for Westside Discs, and he shared a lot of great information about how disc golf sponsorship works. I received some positive feedback about that episode, and I wanted to revisit it and focus solely on the sponsorship information. Some parts of this conversation may seem choppy because I took out everything not pertaining to sponsorship. So if you're interested in sponsorship, I wanted to make kind of like a pocket version of the episode that you could re-listen to just before you apply. Or if you have a friend that's interested in sponsorship, you'd be able to share this shorter version with them. I hope you're able to get as much information out of this that I did. Let's start talking about sponsorship and players. What's something you look for in a player?
Yeah, so to break it down to a little bit of an extent, it just kind of varies on the player. We can talk about holistically what I look for in regards to how they compose themselves as a human, as an individual in the disc golf community, but we can also break it down via team level and what we look for specifically in there. But I'd say from the generic standpoint, obviously we appreciate the competitive nature of people, but we want you to be a good person, someone that wants to grow the sport truly. It's good to grow your personal brand, of course, but we want to see you being able to grow the sport and in a way of being inclusive to others. I'd say that's probably the number one thing when it comes to sponsorship that we look for, because we have a lot of really, really good disc golfers apply for sponsorship. And they want to be sponsored a lot of the time just because they say that they want to be sponsored or they only throw this disc. And that's great. We want you to throw our discs and whatnot. But when it comes to sponsorship, we want to see you have a desire to grow the sport, especially in the trajectory that this sport is growing that we know and love, in addition to growing yourself potentially. So overall, the growth of the sport and desire to do that and the desire to be a positive light in the disc golf community goes a long way. I'd say that's a pretty standard across the board, no matter what team level we look at.
Would there be any minimum requirements you might look for in a player? They say someone is thinking, you know what, I really want to get sponsored, but then they kind of look at their own self. Anything they should kind of check off?
Yeah, so I'd say when it comes to reviewing sponsorship requests, there's a couple things that are pretty quick indicators for me. It just depends on the team level, but a lot of the time, junior players, they're not going to play as many events early on. Some can. We have plenty of junior players on our DD team that don't last very long as junior players because, you know, all of a sudden they're playing pro and they cash and we're like, okay, we are definitely elevating you. You know, our juniors are very talented and very driven, but we don't anticipate that junior players, depending on the age level, are out there playing 30 events. If we have one like that, that's great. But when it comes to a junior player, we just want to see a promising young player. You know, they've logged some quality rounds, and a lot of that comes down to also they have supportive parents that are a positive light as well. In regards to ambassadors, this one varies a little bit. It's a little bit more wide, but we typically, when we think of ambassador player, we think whether it's what they do from a social media aspect or what they do in running events or if they run leagues or they're just a really good advocate and they're pushing product. So that one varies because it's not as much event oriented. This one has more to do with the leagues, the events ran, the social media, stuff like that. It's not this player has played 20 plus events. And it's not to take away from the ambassadors' disc golf side. It's just a lot of ambassadors aren't as focused solely on the competitive aspect of disc golf. They may compete from time to time, but their main focus in disc golf, or at least when they portray and pursue sponsorship, is to grow it through their community and have play typically be second to that. in regards to our middle tiers, like lieutenants, soldiers, things along those lines. That's where we start to get into your local pros. And it separates a little bit towards captain too, because we like to see people play a lot of their local scenes competitively. You know, we like to see people hit about 15 events in 2 years, something along those lines. And all of their contracts kind of go into specifics on their expectations that we'd like to hold them to. And then the captains are going to be your local pro, but they're typically going to hit a couple more big stops the majority of the time. And a similar model to Dynamic, we have the Lucid and Fusion, which are our local pros, and then local pro plus. They're, you know, going on small tours or something along those lines. And then we also have Chris Villa on our captain team, who is the team captain, who furthers himself by the amazing work he does, speaking with all of our team members, being active in the West Side community, and he's also known for his stellar play. So it just varies. It's very rare that on our sponsorship request form that we'll have a touring pro on there. I was fortunate enough that like the first player I ever added was actually like a really big name in Europe that just happened to apply. It's a rare anomaly. You'll see 1,000 rated plus pro apply for sponsorship on that platform. A lot of the time those touring pros will reach out to myself or Eric to further a conversation, or we'll reach out to them to further a conversation.
You're probably going to see a lot of applications that maybe have the same thing on there that shows that they're not quite ready. Is there anything that you can talk about that?
Yeah. I'd say one thing is we have a lot of players that apply that don't even have a PDGA number. So PDGA number is a pretty good basis of when it comes to sponsorship. Obviously, we want to see you be active in the PDGA. So that's pretty much, I can separate different sponsorship requests based on whether they have a PDGA number. And then I'd say that something that I hear pretty frequently, you know, is that your rating kind of determines whether you should be sponsored or not. And I disagree with that, to an extent, because we have plenty of players that may not have the most stellar rating. They may not be 1,000 rated, but guess what? They are a phenomenal tournament director who puts on fantastic events, or they put on great leagues or things on those lines. So PDGA rating doesn't play as much of a factor as people think, but I'd say a lot of the time, depending on the tier level of what they're looking for in sponsorship, 800 and above is a pretty good standing basis, depending on what they're inquiring for sponsorship.
You mentioned before a couple times about different levels of sponsorship packages. Would you mind just giving us a kind of a rundown as much as you can, what different levels look like?
So our junior team players, across the board, before I go into specific on it, every player has an allotment, a disc allotment that they can utilize for their discs throughout the season. It's a set amount that we give them at the beginning of the season, and they can use that for discs, baskets, bags, things along those lines. Additionally, we give each player an apparel allotment. With that apparel allotment, what that means is at the beginning of the year, we work with an apparel company, and they are able to use that apparel allotment towards the online store. X amount of money that you spend at the store is covered by us Westside Discs, us Dynamic Discs. Touring players usually use their apparel allotment via company card. And that could happen. They go to a Nike outlet, they buy some clothing, they send it over for us to stamp up. So across the board, that is pretty standard. When you get to your local pro, typically your touring pros is where you start to include or see other packages. Your local pro, depending on who it is, will potentially have wholesale credit. You can utilize this wholesale credit for either purchasing stuff for coursework, or you can also use it for purchasing of fundraiser discs. Any team member can buy fundraiser discs. It's just wholesale credit is X amount of dollars towards your order for a custom run or something along those lines is covered by Dynamic Disc Westside Discs. And then as we get up to touring, that's typically where you see a little bit more exclusive package specifically catered to our touring pros because they're constantly on the road. This is the job that they do every single day. And that's where you see everyone's contract differentiate on the touring community. It could be a travel stipend. It could be entry fees is pretty standard throughout our company.
Covering the interest fees?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that for all players or just kind of touring players?
That is for our touring players. With the local pro pluses, you'll typically see a percentage of their entry fees covered. It could be A tiers and above or elite series events. But in regards to the covering of entry fees, a lot of the time it's just our touring players and some of those local pro pluses. Other players will typically cover their entry fees with the utilization of custom run or custom hot stamp.
Got it.
Yeah. And then other aspects of the touring contract could be a base salary or they get royalties for their tour series discs. And there can be other contingencies and things like that based on their contract.
I think you mentioned bonuses earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What would be some levels to the bonus?
So our bonus structure, I think we have like two or three that we are currently utilizing. Every single team member is able to use our bonus structure. And that is if you win a C tier, a lot of the time you get a certain amount of allocation. If you win a B tier, you get a certain level of allocation. An A tier typically is actual money that is then sent via PayPal by your accounting team. Elite series and above, obviously, is money depending on placement. So I think it goes down to 10th place on some of those elite series events. Obviously, with our touring players, sometimes because contracts roll over and their bonus structure could roll over and continue to grow. Different pros can have different bonus structures depending on their play.
So going back to like people applying, they want to get your attention, Dynamic, Latitude, Westside. What are some maybe do's or don'ts of going about getting your attention?
Yeah, I'd like to just say that probably one of our team members that said it best from Dynamic is the young and smart Cyrus Watrin. He had told me when we had a conversation about sponsorship that for a long time he was trying to do all the things that he thought he needed to do to be sponsored. You know, like checking the box, things along those lines. But it wasn't until he had actually started doing things that he wanted to do in the sport for his brand, for growing the sport, that he started to, you know, gain the momentum. And I noticed that when it came to sponsorship request time from Cyrus. So I definitely think that that is a great piece of advice, is don't look for sponsorship just to be sponsored and try and do all the things you need to do to do sponsored. Do something you're passionate about that helps push the sport, that helps push your brand.
What does the interview process look like? So someone applies and you want to reach out to them. What's that process look like from application to being sponsored?
Yeah, so I think last year it was a quarterly basis review. It's been a little bit more tedious this year. I try and keep it as much to a quarterly basis as I can, but we used to have three people reviewing all the sponsorship requests, which made it a little bit easier to do that. Now it's just been me reviewing all the sponsorship requests. So those can pile up on occasion, but I definitely do my best to get through all of them. When it comes to the application process, what I'll do is I'll review it on a Google spreadsheet because all those form submissions go to one spot for me. And I'll sort it by team level. So I'll look at the junior sponsorships, the dynamic sponsorships, and the Westside sponsorships. From there, a lot of the time I'll break it down to trying to look for the TDs / ambassadors, looking for the local pro, and then even potential, it's rare, but even potential for a touring pro. Once I do that, I isolate a couple individuals who I think would be a great fit, and immediately I'm like, all right, I'm going to highlight them in green, and I'm going to move them aside, or I'll have a lot of people that I'm like, I could see them being a good fit, or this is someone that I want to keep my eye on that might not be ready just yet, but I want to follow up with them. And so we have our yeses, our nos, and our maybes almost every time. And we were very fortunate last year. We didn't feel it right to cut any of our team members from Dynamic and Westside due to the pandemic, due to restrictions in different locations all throughout the world. We didn't feel it was right to say you didn't fulfill your contractual obligations when some of them weren't able to, not by their own choice, but just due to the nature of the situation we were in. Right. We were able to join double digits to both DD and Westside, which is great, and we're happy to do so, and I'm looking forward to continue to grow DD and Westside, but we do have a substantial amount of team members, which goes into the interview process. Versus last year, we did a lot of mid-season additions. This year, we haven't, just due to the fact that DD has, I think off the top of my head, about 127 sponsored players. And Westside, I believe right now, has about 35. And so we're wanting to continue to grow Westside, at the same time grow DD, but we need to also reflect on what we have in-house, players that are killing it out there, ambassadors that are killing it out there, versus ones that potentially haven't been doing as much on their end, which would then potentially, during contract season or negotiation, open up more spots to either team.
Cutting players, what would that decision look like? How does that work?
Yeah, a lot of the time it comes down to I'll check what they're doing. Here in a couple weeks, I'll actually be sending a review, which is an end of the season review. And it's a form slash survey that our players fill out. And it asks you what your goals were going into the season. Were you able to accomplish these goals? What are your goals for the following season? How are you going to do that? How can we as a sponsor help you accomplish these goals? We'll ask if they have any references for players that we should look at picking up. And a couple other options there on that survey. And we use that survey and we highlight a lot of issues. We read through all of it with the players and find out kind of the general consensus of how a lot of our players are feeling. From there, we have a lot of individual conversations depending on the responses that we get there. But a lot of the time from this will actually probably be my first off-season having to cut individuals. And a lot of it from thus far comes down to, have they kept up on their end of the contract, or have they just been doing less than they were anticipating or told us they were going to do, but continuing to utilize their allotment and just buying disc after disc after disc and not playing an event and not running an event. Those are tough for me because at that point, I know that there's plenty of people that are applying for sponsorship that are eager and hungry to spread the brand, to push Westside, to market DD, to spread the growth of the sport. And I can't in my right conscience be like, yes, that person's sitting there, I'm going to say no to them, but I'm going to continue, you know, this partnership with this person who isn't doing as much as they used to. And that conversation is probably going to go more along the lines of, hey, I appreciate what you've done in the past. We're concerned about what you haven't been doing. If you ever find yourself doing as much as you used to or finding a new route in disc golf, like reach out to us. We'll have that conversation. So that's much more the approach that I'm anticipating going into this off season and contract season with.
Got it. Okay. All right. So going back to kind of like the application. So you got your spreadsheet, everyone's sitting there, different levels. So what's the interview? How's the interview process work then?
Yeah, so essentially a lot of the time, we, depending on the level of player, will either reach out to set up an interview, especially when it comes to touring players. We've done a couple this year where we have set up a video call with the player because we're not able to see them in person in that moment. Or there's been times where I've had conversations with people in person at the tournaments I'm traveling to just to gauge their interest in the potential of sponsorship. But in regards to the other team levels, you know, your ambassadors, your juniors, a lot of the time it's going to come down to reviewing that. Some people will find it necessary to get on the phone with them or video call to kind of expand further on it. But a lot of the time we will send an offer to them or get on the phone with them and then send an offer via email. They'll have a link to accept their their sponsorship, and then from there, you know, we kind of, I don't know the proper word, but it'd be something similar to onboarding them or getting them in our system, getting them used to the bonus of applications and things along those lines. In a similar way to kind of, you would go to a job and you'd be training for it. We definitely want our players to know the ins and outs of their sponsorship.
All right. So is there ever any, cross placements? If someone applies, they apply for DD, but they think, you might be better fit for Westside, or vice versa. They want to be at Westside, but like, you know what? We have a spot to be better for Dynamic. Anything like that? Or
yeah, you see that a lot more often when it comes to tour team sponsorship. And I say that because when it comes to sponsorship, I typically will put a contract offer together or inquire about what David Berglund, the CEO of Latitude, would like, / Jeremy Resko, CEO of DD. Since Westside is co-owned by DD and Latitude, when it comes to touring players, I have to have conversations with the two of them. Versus when I do sponsorship with DD solely, it's only Jeremy. So it could be one of those things where I feel strongly that I'd like to add this certain player to Westside, and Jeremy says I'd like them to be DD, and Berglund might say I don't like that direction for Westside. DD sounds better. So that's why you see that a little bit more often in that case. A good example of that, I think, is Jesse Niemann had applied for Westside initially, and Jeremy said, well, Westside's great. Do you want to see if what Jesse's preference would be between DD and Westside, and see what we can offer him for both contracts, whether it be Westside or DD? And we ended up going the DD route with Jesse, just due to kind of what Jesse was looking for in a package sponsorship.
Okay.
Occasionally, I'll see a player apply for DD, and I'll ask, are you interested in Westside and DD? And a lot of the time, those players that are interested in both, that ups your chance a little bit more, I'd say, just because I try and add as many good assets and team members to both teams.
Is there recruiting in disc golf sponsorship?
Yeah. So that's the aspect where I kind of spoke to a little bit about like scouting and whatnot. As team members, they typically serve as scouts in their own way, because I can't tell you the amount of times in a year that I have a team member reach out to me and be like, hey, this player out here, he just won my C tier. He's 12 years old and he smacked everyone in the advanced division. And I'm like, really? And then I'll be like, okay, does he throw any trilogy, anything along those lines? So I do see a lot of recruiting and scouting, or personally myself, you know, I'm out here at the Pro Tour finale. Not only am I here to support Chris, support Nico, support any of our players that are involved in the tournament at all, but I'm also going to be, any tournament I go to, I keep my eyes on any touring pro, just to see where they're at, how they're throwing and everything like that. And at the end of the season, a lot of the time, Resko or Berglund will be kind of looking to make additions on the touring side during Junior Worlds. You know, Berglund was inquiring about any people that he thought would be a good fit for Latitude on the junior side. So I think the recruiting / scouting aspect is an ongoing thing at all times. And that's one of the things that is really enjoyable to me early on. Is I'm not really that well known in disc golf at this point in time. And so I will see a lot of the nature of people's true intentions when it comes to disc golf, because, you know, if 2010 world champion Eric McCabe goes up, some of the time they'll be, you know, trying to impress Eric McCabe and might not show their true self as much as if I'm randomly on a disc golf course, they hit first available and all of a sudden they're cussing up a storm and yelling at people on the card behind them.
Right. Yeah, so the true nature.
Yeah.
Perfect. Now, what about, I guess it'd be considered poaching then. Is there any kind of unspoken rules among team managers about talking to other players?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had that many conversations with other team managers, to be quite honest. I've met Innova's team manager during Dynamic Disc Open. He was very nice, and he'd mentioned that he has a no poach player agreement. And, you know, that was the first time I actually heard anything in reference to poaching at the time. Besides that, I tend to just want to be open and honest with the player from whatever disc manufacturer. Ask like, hey, I don't know when your contract expires, but if it expires this year, I'd love to have a conversation with you. EMAC does the same, you know, and a lot of the time the player will say, hey, yeah, my contract expires at the end of this year. I'm going to continue to honor my agreement, obviously. And we're like, that's awesome. We respect that. Let's have that conversation at the end of the year. Or they could say, hey, I'm unhappy. There's a couple tournaments left. I would definitely like to talk. It just kind of depends. Every disc manufacturer does their own separate thing. So I don't really know that much about other team managers' approaches towards the off season, but I can tell you one thing is I just like to build relationship with the tour community first and foremost, because every single manufacturer makes good plastic. I definitely don't ever want to take the approach with a player saying, we're the best, we're number one, leave this company. I want to be able to build a relationship with those because we all have the same common goal of growing the sport and furthering our own brands as disc manufacturers. But I have the utmost respect for those other team managers that have been doing this for a long, long time.
Thank you so much for listening. This is the Westside Discussion Podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed this revisit about sponsorship information. But more than that, I hope it helps you with your disc golf journey. Thank you again to the sponsors, Mando Discware and Vertifuel Coffee. When you check out, use code WSD10 to save 10%. That's WSD10. The theme song is What Would You Be Like by Akira the Don. We'll continue the discussion next time.